My name is Suzanne Stallings. This is 2 o'clock on Friday afternoon, January the 30th. We're at 705 West 8th Street, the home of Paulette Taylor. Paulette, will you tell us your full name?
Yes, it's Paulette Ann Hickerson Taylor. Okay.
And what of your birthday you want to tell us?
Oh, don't mind it all. It's August 8th, 1946.
Okay. Did you grow up in Georgetown?
I did.
And where did you live? Where'd your family live?
My family, it's ironic that you ask, because my family lived in this area.
Okay.
Just a few blocks away where the park is.
Uh-huh.
And that was prior to the urban renewal development. Mm-hmm. So my family lived, in fact, I occasionally go by and look at the one of the shrubs, crepe myrtles that grew in my, every year they grew, and so it's right there at a few blocks away.
Yeah. What did your parents do for a living?
Well, my parents were divorced. I grew up in a single-parent home. My father, who went to the Army, my mother did domestic work. She was most of the children during that era dropped out of school because of family situations, and they had to help support the family, her mom and dad, by pulling cotton or whatever the jobs were available. And they were divorced. They were young when I was born, and after a year or so, they went their separate ways. Both of my parents were quite instrumental in my development.
Good. Did you have relatives here in Georgetown?
Oh, absolutely. I had a village. In fact, my aunt, Ethel Moore, who was the matriarch of the family and very pushy, very pro-education, and she had no children of her own, I had lots of aunts who had no children but were very motherly. Mm-hmm. And so her sister, who lives directly across the street from me, and cousins, I have cousins as well, but a lot of my dad's side of the family, well, I had some elderly relatives, but I do have relatives here.
That's great.
Yes.
Did you and your family belong to a church here in Georgetown?
I grew up in the church, Friendlyville Missionary Baptist Church, which is on 14th Street, a 103-year-old church building that resembles the old jail, because I think they used the same kinds of stone to construct it. But I grew up in that church and have a history there as I grew up playing the piano, of course, in Sunday school and teaching Sunday school and youth director and you name it, I've probably done it, and still quite active as church secretary.
What do you remember about school when you were in the elementary grades?
Well, in retrospect, I mean, now I could talk about the good times, because I've had this slogan that I've told everybody, you don't miss what you've never had. And those were good times, and we accomplished a lot and utilized what we were given, what God gave us, and we used that to further and better ourselves. But in school, I try not to compare now with then, because it's not quite as memorable. Well, it doesn't have really good reflections. But what I remember is walking to school and not having the availability of a school bus, muddy streets, getting there, but liking school. Mm-hmm. Liking school and enjoying the atmosphere of school.
Mm-hmm.
And being surrounded in a school environment with teachers who cared holistically about a child, not just their academic progress, but they cared about you as a child, and when you disobeyed, you know, they knew your mother by her first name and would say, now, if I have to call Darthula, which was my mother's name. Most of our teachers were single. Well, some of them. I think when people remember teachers, they, and Nora might have mentioned Miss Jackson, who commuted. She lived in Austin. She stayed here during the week, but she went home every weekend to be with her mother and to go to church. But very dedicated, very oriented. She, you know, the term now is multitasking. Mm-hmm. And she was the principal secretary, the English teacher. She did so many things out there at the school. The program chairman for the graduation. Hmm. Nearly all the signatures were her handwriting, her script writing. And so my diploma has her name on it. There were good times. But as we reflect now and looking at those, you know, there were some turbulent times when we wanted better and we could not understand why we didn't have more than one water fountain or there were no heaters, no heating system in the girls' restroom, or the boys had to go outside to get to the restroom, and those kinds of things. But when I look at what we did and how we activated parents, mm-hmm. we seemingly were more family-oriented. Mm-hmm. And it truly, back then, took the village to raise the child.
What do you remember about school from the eighth grade up, Paulette?
Oh, wow. Camaraderie. Mm-hmm. I have a picture of girls, my classmates, and how we were very involved with each other. And a lot of times we had the camaraderie made it possible for girls to share, especially when those who didn't have the appropriate upbringing, or their homes weren't conducive to the right environment for kids. We all kind of band together. Mm-hmm. I also remember from eighth grade, I guess the motivation that those teachers had dedicated themselves to be influential in our lives, mm-hmm. To make sure that we got the best of what we were offered, education, even though we lacked a lot of things, typing classes, and we never missed what we didn't have. One table in the back of a classroom with a few sets of encyclopedias for a library. And yet, kids went on to get PhDs. It just amazes me. Or to become the director of music for Dallas ISD.
Wow.
Or to write books. But all of the things I remember, football games, even not having facilities and someone acting in our behalf to make things possible. Mm-hmm. One school bus or using the facilities on the other side of town or walking to get there. So it was a mixture. It was a mixture of good. I think I said at the interview that Marcia Forney did, it was the good, the bad, and the ugly. Mm-hmm. Some things were not so good. But again, we utilized with what we had and made the best of it in our school. Sometimes sharing textbooks. Mm-hmm. One class two classes in a. I can close my eyes right now and see a classroom where there were one grade on one side of the room and the other grade on the other side, simply because we were limited as far as classrooms, and so the teacher had to teach both the best she could. She had fifth graders on one side and sixth graders on the other. And yet we made it. There were such good times, and there was, it was such a wholesome time where in the community, businesses, we had black businesses, and we lost so much when they demolished our school.
Yeah. Yeah.
And demolished our records. And left us with only the memorable parts of what we had. Often people call me from, a guy called me from North Carolina, said, "Paulette, I knew you were my classmate, and I wanted to take some classes." Well, the Georgetown High School told him to call me. Like I had all of the cumulative records sitting in my garage or something. They were all destroyed. All my records destroyed. And when I started teaching in 71, the UIL trophies, that was another subject that came up. And I often sit and think about those trophies, those state trophies, how they were just, they all of a sudden disappeared. UIL.
Wow.
Yes. Yes. So there were good times. There were good times. There were good times.
How did you feel about all that?
Oh, it was horrible because I saw them in a box, and then when I mentioned it, they went on the display. On the display cabinet, and then all of a sudden, and I said, "Well, what's going to happen to them?" Well, they were supposed to have been transferred to the Georgetown High School to be with the others, and somehow they disappeared. In between. And I was so glad, I don't know why he was on the TV, Farney, who is head, you know, I don't know if you know him, of UIL, and Marcia, his daughter-in-law, who did her dissertation on the schools. And he said to me, "Paulette, we need to get the names of those people who were recipients of UIL so that we can duplicate. We've got it in the records. Marcia has done the work, and we can get those trophies
good.
Replaced." So that I don't want to be too lengthy in my explanations, because there's just so much, and I've often thought about journaling before I forget it, putting it down in a journal. But we had some good times, and there were some bad times, too, that we tried not to reflect, but the good always outweighed the bad. The good always outweighed the bad.
Well, bless your heart.
Yes. So we tried not to complain as much.
What did you and your family and friends do for fun here in Georgetown?
Oh, fun. Fun. I have a very family-oriented... my family is very, we've been doing something for 50 years. We have met at Christmas for 50 years plus.
Right.
We started with always at my grandparents' house, and then it became my aunt across the street's house, which we've just celebrated 50 years plus. Everything people came from California. And we celebrate Christmas. My sister keeps up with every person's birthday. She takes a plain calendar and put their birthdays down so that we celebrate all the children's birthdays so that they can in turn pass the legacy.
Yeah.
We celebrate historical events. I'm really on Black History, Juneteenth. But not just to have fun and games, and that's why I was so bitter about when they display, when the paper displays fun, or eating. It's more than that. I want the history told, why the freedom that didn't dwindle down to the South until June, even though the emancipation was signed in January. Fun things, birthday, traveling. And we're trying now to get our families, you know, together. And family gatherings. Mm-hmm. You're saying presently what we do, or what did we do then?
Oh, what did you do then?
Then, because of the lack of money, but we always found a way, because we had family members who cooked.
Uh-huh.
And baked. And we always could do things around in food.
Oh, yeah.
And joyous times, because I played the piano, so I always had to play some old hymns and joyous kinds of things. And the kids, of course, are into sports. But we always enjoyed each other. We always found a way to have fun parties. And we had, you know, house parties. I mean, as far as my classmates and my peers, you know, coke parties and fun and barbecue in the backyard. And I was trying to think, what else did we do? Juneteenth was such a big thing, because at that time we had a park before the city took our park and leased it to the schools for a dollar.
Where?
Yes. It was our park from the 50s.
Where was it?
It was a well where Carver School sits, where I taught. There was a well there, and it was just, you know, and there's always something that happens that thinks, okay, here you go stripping me of my history again. But again, oh, and we had the little places where we could go and dance.
Uh-huh.
You know, the proprietors, you know, they made hamburgers and we jukeboxes and in the neighborhoods. But we always found a way, hay rides, and we enjoyed those seasonal kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
But we always somehow was able to, among ourselves, without bothering, you know, without trying to get a permit or trying to go through the city or the other side of town, we always tried to do what we could through the churches.
Yeah.
Do what we could on our own. And it worked. Mm-hmm. Because I think we grew up good kids.
Yeah.
With less problems than those we see now.
Mm-hmm.
We were okay.
Now, how did your life change after school? This has a bunch of, did you get married, did you have children, did you get a job, did you continue your education?
My life after college, after high school.
After high school.
After high school. I didn't think I'd go to college.
Uh-huh.
At the time, we only went to, business school. You know, they had the Nixon Clay Business College, secretarial school, where you could go 9 months. Well, I didn't have money, but that was what my goal was, to go. I wanted to be a secretary. Because everyone always said, well, you've got nice penmanship, and you'd be a good secretary. But money wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
But the ambition was.
Mm-hmm.
And I aspired to achieve. And so, again, that village came together. It takes the village. The aunts who didn't have children came together. And they said, you're going to school.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. Here's my aunt, they were military. I never shall forget. It was an army trunk. Army green truck. Okay. I've got sheets. She has an ironing board.
Huh.
And this compilation of things just appeared. You know, here's the sheets, here's the your room and board would go month by month. It's $36.75 or whatever. Wow. And Mom was working at the school as in the cafeteria at the time. And my aunts, you know, they worked for prominent people here. The Sherrills were prominent real estate people. And in fact, that's a gift from Miss Sherrill, my housewarming gift.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
From Mrs. Sherrill, Owen W. Sherrill. I think they have they're big A&M people. Sherrill room down at A&M.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, but I didn't mean to deviate from that. But so I said, I'm going to college. Well, I thought, where? And at the time, you know, it wasn't UT. UT wasn't letting me come.
Yeah.
So it was the state-supported schools that were cheaper, Prairie View A&M, which is down in Houston. I had to ride the bus, $5.75. I never shall forget. No car. I cried at dinner because I always wondered where were they having, what mom was cooking for dinner at home. But I went to college semester by semester. Mm-hmm. So assuming I was going to take a secretarial science class for 2 years. 2 years became three, and before I knew it, I was a business education major. And I thought 3 years became four. Mm-hmm. And I was able to graduate with a degree in business. And at the time, my high school sweetheart, over there, I'm a widow now for 29, my high school sweetheart was getting out of the Navy. He'd gone to college for a year, but his parents couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
And so he went to the Navy, but he was getting out of the Navy. Mm-hmm. And so we had been writing each other, and we got married. Mm-hmm. And I was blessed with two children. That's the youngest, the 32-year-old, mm-hmm. who was four. That's how we looked. Four. And 11 when his dad died. My husband had a stroke. Then I thought, oh my gosh. Well, at the time my husband had a stroke, I'm really doing this in a choppy way. It's not in a really nice order sequence, because when I got married, after I got married, I was a business major.
Uh-huh.
And my husband was doing a trucking business because, uh-huh. you know, he couldn't get a job doing what he was doing in the Navy. No one would hire him. I was working for Head Start, a mm-hmm. former mayor, Raleigh Elliott, had hired me during the summer. And I faced some of the most terrible discrimination I've ever faced. Another girl and I, a longtime family here, Miranda's, she was going to El Paso. We were college students. Mm-hmm. This was prior to that. Oh, I'm just mixing this up. We had worked, and I got, but I'm saying that to preface what I'm about to say. We had worked to educate people about Head Start, the Head Start program, because none of the parents knew anything about it. And so we went to every little town in the county. And I never shall forget it, Granger. They refused to let me eat. They said I'd stand at the back door. But they would let the other girl in. And Mr. Elliott was about to come unglued. And rejection all through the county, but I got through that. That led me to work with problem families. And I started steering away from education because I applied for Georgetown High School. They weren't going to hire me as a business as education teacher. I wanted to teach shorthand. And mm-hmm. When I went to Prairie View, I had no typing classes. Mm-hmm. We had one typewriter in the principal's office. And yet I aspired to be a secretary. So, you know, the first day I was doing this and all the Dallas and Houston kids. I made up in my mind. So when they were having fun, I sat in that typing room teaching myself to type.
Good for you.
I taught myself well to the point I became a TA. Mm-hmm. As a teacher assistant in one of the classes. In two classes, mm-hmm. I became a TA of typing in college. Well, after I got out of college and I didn't get a chance to teach what I wanted to teach and what I was ready to teach, I got a call from one of the superintendent, Jack Frost, and he said, we don't have a position for you in that, but I was called to teach special ed. I had no special ed credentials.
That's what you taught?
I had no special ed credentials. Well, at the time, they said you can go to University of Texas is offering a program whereby you can teach on an emergency. You can start teaching as long as you've had 6 hours mm-hmm. of special ed, your intro or exceptional children. I should never shall forget it. I drove to Austin, enrolled in a 6-hour class, and started teaching special ed at 6 hours. So then I continued to accumulate my hours until I was certified. So I got my certification at Texas, and which allowed me to teach, and that led on to teaching. I taught.
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't know how much you want me to say about that. But I, you know, I continued to teach and then went on and got a master's degree. At St. Ed's. I was driving to Southwest Texas in the graduate program, but that was too much. And, but that's kind of the gist of it. And then I got married and had two beautiful children who are they're now 32 and 40. The 40-year-old has two children. The 32-year-old has none. He just has cats. And was able to, he went to Southwest Texas and got a degree as well. And the 40-year-old liked trucks, and I think he went to trucking school.
Uh-huh.
And made more money than I did as a teacher. But I didn't know at what point you wanted me to stop to talk about living my life as a teacher, or were you ready for that part?
Absolutely.
It made me stronger.
Uh-huh.
Made me stronger in faith. When I became a widow so young at 33.
Oh.
My husband had a stroke at 35. Mrs. Cheryl Owen Cheryl was able to work with us, and of course she took a lot of flack from about this because she helped us get a house on Booty's Road before the lake came in. And people said, why would you let them move out there? Beautiful house. They even spray painted on my house, KKK. And at the time, some prominent people, in fact, my dear friend Stephen Schaefer, the ophthalmologist, Stephen lived out there, and the Morrises, Skip Morris and his wife, and the McMasters, they came and said, you must not move. And came with a box with cleaning things. You must stay. You must stay. Well, I stayed until my husband had the stroke. And
yes.
The night after he had the stroke, I sold the house.
Yes.
And I needed healing. I needed regrouping.
Sure.
And people said, well, don't build. There were these two little lots were here.
Mm-hmm.
And I built the house back in my neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Because I felt like I don't want to just be receiving. I want to be where I can give.
Yes. Yes.
And I've never regretted it.
Yes.
I just never remarried. My mother used to say she doesn't have time. She wouldn't have time for a husband. I am quite busy. And I like being busy.
Mm-hmm.
I like being instrumental in doing things and seeing things and traveling and going. Being a part of people's lives. So. There were bitter times. I was alone when he died, but it made me stronger. I was, you know, by myself, and my, bless her heart, I don't know if you've lived here long enough to know Joanne Ford.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
My dear friend. My dear friend.
Mm-hmm.
My dear friend. It would take a whole interview to talk about my dear friend because she was our principal at the time. And
mm-hmm.
she, And the thing I never shall forget, because, you know, I was, yes, I was grieving, but she picked up the phone and she said, "Paulette." I said, "Yes." "When are you coming back to work? These kids are waiting for you."
Oh.
So I pulled up myself, and I've been running ever since. My life has been interesting. I'm a giver. Mm-hmm. I like to think of myself, and now I'm enjoying the grandchildren and exploration and going to the Nutcracker and just involving them in this whole world of enthusiasm and newness, and other children as I tutor.
Mm-hmm.
The exposure and involving senior citizens who still want to be active, like the lady who drives from Estrella, from Williams Drive, to help me toot on 17th Street, or the lady who drives from Sun City to come, 81-year-old,
great,
to help me read. That invigorates me.
Yes.
Keeps me going. And the kid who wants to learn, and the high school student who comes over and realizes that I need more on my resume than academic grades.
Yes.
I need community service.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just so many things I want to do. And I said, "Lord, you know, I don't know when my number will come up. I don't know. I'm 62.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so much that I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many places I want to see. I want to take my grandchildren to Washington, and I want to explore and do so many, go to Alaska, and if you will allow it, I sure will be thankful." Oh, I just enjoy life.
I enjoy
life, but yet, when I wake up in the morning, you know, I'm thankful, but I never forget to say, "Thy will be done."
Yes.
"Thy will be done. Let His will be done."
Yes.
Well, and I love music.
Uh-huh.
I like lots of music. I like gospel music that meditates my soul. I like jazz that soothes my movements. And so sometimes in my pajamas at 11 o'clock, I might be at my piano playing a hymn. All
right.
All right. I enjoy life. And I love to dance. I still like to dance. I dance with myself. I dance. I love it. I always liked to dance when I was younger and taught my kids to dance. Now I'm teaching my grandchildren to dance and to learn to live. Like, what does that say something about cherishing all that? There's another one. I've got sayings all along the wall about dance. When no one's looking or something, you've probably seen it. But every once in a while, I think about being lonely.
Yeah.
But never alone.
Yes. Yes.
Lonely but never alone. And I do a lot of inspirational reading to build my spirit, and to daily reading, I'm getting teary-eyed, of daily bread that enriches my soul. I think about dear friends like Nora. Nora's a little older than me. We went to school together, who was such a bright and wonderful nurse.
Mm-hmm.
Whose active life was interrupted. And I keep saying, "Lord, help me to fulfill what I'm here for." I'm here to continue to educate. The math is getting harder. And this new math in school. I need
knees start hurting. I'm trying to exercise, you know, all of these things, one day at a time. Mm-hmm. I try to make a difference in lives one day at a time. So I enjoy life. I continue to be open for learning. Regardless of the accolades or what you see, I still want to learn. Mm-hmm. Want so badly, so badly. I wanted to enroll in the senior university. Mm-hmm. Because they had a course on how to memoir writing.
Oh, okay.
How to write, how to express yourself in writing. But I really, really desire some basic conversational Spanish.
Yes.
To be able to converse with a grandma who has felt they can't communicate with the school.
Yes.
A lot of the special need kids whose parents feel like sometimes the school's judgmental. You know, don't look at me how I look on the outside.
Yeah.
And they tend to
Oh, I'm sorry.
No,
yes.
If there's something that you want specifically that you want me to talk about.
Well, because this is important, they wanted you to talk about how you were involved in the effort to desegregate the Georgetown schools.
Oh, certainly.
And what did you think should be done?
My efforts were very limited.
Okay.
Simply because at that point, I was a senior in high school.
Okay.
There was very little I could do. It was going to take adults to actually make a difference. I wanted to be able to get to that high school to get that typing class. Mm-hmm. Because, again, I wanted to be a secretary. And I thought if I just knew some basics in typing, well, let's see, who was it? Harvey Miller, Nora's brother, Harvey Miller, and some adults had gotten together to file a lawsuit because we were not allowed entrance. There were children, young children, at most of all the schools, and I think they organized it in a very nonviolent way. Mm-hmm. To go approach the schools, and maybe they were told a chronology of things to do, to approach the schools and see would you be allowed.
Uh-huh.
Well, upon approaching, never shall forget, and I learned to love him because he was my supervisor later. School's named after him, Pop Williams. Mr. Williams said, "No, I'm afraid you can't go to school here. And we're taking names down, but y'all need to go on back down to Carver." And so we were not allowed to go. And then that became the lawsuit that Harvey Miller filed, in especially for his daughters, but he included us. Mm-hmm. And got the consent of our parents, of course. And that was the only thing. I mean, I was involved in it by name only.
Sure.
But not as far as marching, protesting, anything of that sort. We were just told to attempt to go. And when we were not allowed, then it became, all of the newspapers throughout the area, the state, about Georgetown. And that was 64. Well, I went on to graduate. That was my year of graduation.
Mm-hmm.
So by September, I was in college.
Yeah.
And some of the, I'm sure Dr. Bonola and some of the others would say, well, you know, that's when they put their heads together and said, we've got to do something.
Yeah.
And that's why they built what was Westside. They didn't even give it a name. They built the school that was to house 175 kids.
Uh-huh.
First through 12th grade, one building. And so they just built some. Ooh. And I often told the stories I walked down the hallways, because now I can see where they added on to the school. They built the school quickly to make them forget, to peace with them, make them forget about integration, because now you got a new school. Well, then the Civil Rights Act was coming through, and then, they have to integrate. That was about the gist of my participation, because then I was really involved with in college, sure, trying to get my education, and that was it, because then they had to, and I think the kids, because they were not necessarily forced to integrate, like Nora's brother, and I don't know if she told you the story, they had to go in 65, and they could feel the coldness and were not received. And then all of a sudden they saw, we've got these kids these great athletes. And the story was told about how he was kicked. I don't know if she told you about that.
Yes.
Intentionally. And then wound up on dialysis because of injury to his kidney.
Yeah.
But that was the gist of my involvement, as far as the, I never protested, I never spoke out, because I was a senior.
Sure.
And I just, I just didn't have much involvement.
When, just to get back to that for a second, did your, what you knew about it, did your friends and family members agree about what should happen, or was there...
Well, I think the word around was mixed.
Uh-huh.
They were afraid to part with this family-oriented school.
Uh-huh.
Who really, even though the children weren't getting the proper education that they should have gotten, they were afraid to part with this family-oriented environment.
Sure.
And we gained something, but we lost something.
Sure.
With integration. We lost the parental contact, because parents were afraid to go and see how the kids were doing. This was the law, and back then you were quiet, you obeyed the law, and you didn't question the law. And so our kids went, and the kids had to harbor all of that, and so there were some parents that, I heard, we don't want this, and I heard people speak out as when I came home on weekends about it.
Mm-hmm.
But they were mixed.
Yeah.
Mixed emotion. And yet, parents wanted their children to do well.
Sure.
They wanted them to do well.
Sure.
But it was tough. It was hard. And another episode was, and my dear friend Kathy Hoard, who's a vice principal there at Carver now, we taught, known each other for 25 years. I said to her, at the time, McCoy School, I think in Carver, were built about the same time. They really, the city's really ready to sell that to the city or something, the school district. And I said, when they built this school, they just called it West Side. Mm-hmm. And we were Carver. We were George Washington Carver. She said, well, why don't we do something about it? I said, what? She said, let's go to the board and ask them to give us back our name. 1991, I think I brought them back there. She and I spoke. And, well, I know I did most of the speaking, but she and I spoke concerning asking the board to give West Side back its original name. When they moved, it was George Washington Carver, and we want our name.
Sure.
And I never shall forget the statement that I heard from an administrating. And he said, I don't care if it's staying Podunkville. never shall forget that. I don't care.
But there was one that said, let's do it. That's the right thing to do. And so the school was given its name.
Okay.
And that's how we got back to George Washington Carver. And from that, we were instrumental. In fact, I was just talking to a lady. They're going to commemorate some things concerning Carver. They wrote to the museum, the George Washington Carver Museum, and they gave them a wealth of information about George Washington Carver. And I think they've lost it, but they have a nice portrait up there of him. And we had a little ceremony that commemorated right in the parking lot the naming of the school, and I spoke. And those were memorable times. Those were just such memorable times. Memorable. Really were. In all 31 years, I taught at Carver, all of my teaching years. And of course, now I was going to tell that portrait back there of me near the sign. They've got a sign there where they've named the outdoor fence, white fenced-in area is named for me.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's good.
So Carver's my school. It's my passion.
That's wonderful. Oh, you have any questions for me?
No. I was going to ask you, how were you chosen to do this?
The library sent out an announcement about what they were going to do.
I see.
And asked if anybody would be interested in participating in this.
Okay. Was this through the Friends of Library? The Friends of the Library? I mean, who did they send it to?
I'm not sure who all they sent it to, but it could be there.
Okay.
And this had been an interest of mine in Houston.
I see. In Houston.
Yeah.
Yeah. I loved Houston.
So. Got to do it again.
Yes, Houston. Well, that was our rival school, Texas Southern University.
Absolutely.
Was one of our rival schools. Gosh, I remember those days.
Thank you so much for doing this.
You are just more than welcome.
Thank